and you are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number, and our email address is afternoon@newstalk.com. Later on in the show, James Dempsey will be in with us. One of the shows he's going to be talking about is The Iris Affair, that launches this Thursday, starring our own Niamh Alger. And also we're going to be speaking with a psychological scientist about environmental crimes and perhaps what's going through the minds of people who commit these kind of crimes, and how do they justify it to themselves. First, though, as you know, Hamas has released the final 20 living Israeli hostages. Donald Trump has addressed the Knesset and will also attend a peace conference in Egypt. So how do ordinary Israelis feel today about these developments? John Costello is a former Irish Independent journalist who has been living and working in Israel for the last 17 years. Good afternoon, John.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. I imagine today there's a lot of relief.
It's indescribable, Sean, to be honest. A lot of emotion, as I'm sure you can hear in my voice. This sense of just relief is amazing. I went for a walk just there, and I went down to a main square just down the road from us, and it's a fountain. And over the last 2 years, pictures of the hostages, memorials for those who died in the war have been put there, and they've just built up to a huge kind of, site. And I just walked around it, I videoed it, and to think that, you know, that's going to be no longer necessary is just insane, because we've just been living with this, you know, because those people who were kidnapped, it could have been me, it could have been my wife, it could have been friends, their children, you know, it was just random people in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, the poor people in that musical festival, which ironically was for peace, you know, Hamas didn't realize it was a musical festival. They just came across it. So everyone knows it could have been them. Everyone knows someone or, you know, a close friend who either was kidnapped, who was killed. So it's just super personal. Israel is a very, very small country, like about the size of Munster, you know, and so everyone knows everyone who knows everyone. And so it's just it's personal to all people who live here. And just it's been a traumatic 2 years and today's. Sorry.
It's OK, John. Take your time.
Yeah, I think everyone is feeling like me today here. You know, it's bittersweet. You feel for the families who aren't so lucky.
Mm. And I assume, and whether people, you know, support him or not, that Donald Trump is getting a lot of the credit for this.
Yeah, look, you have to give Trump his dues. To say I don't see eye to eye with him on a political level is an understatement. But, you know, he took a plan that was created under the Biden administration and he just came in and made it happen. Now, I kind of would give the analogy that if someone stole your bike and came from it and you knew the bike was in a tough neighborhood, who would you want to go in and get that bike back for you? Conor McGregor or Michael D. Higgins? I think we'd all say Conor McGregor. And that's the difference with Trump. You know, you just have to give him credit. His way of dealing with things just resonates in the Middle East, because it's a tough neighborhood we live here. And might is right, unfortunately, in this part of the world. And I know Irish people and many people in Europe and further afield have a hard time understanding that. But it's just the way it is here. Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. So it's full of dictators, and dictators don't rule with politeness. So Trump was able to not only to Qatar, who fund Hamas, and Turkey, but he was also able to back Netanyahu. Again, I'm not a big fan. Push him into a corner and give him no wriggle room at all. And it was just true Trump being Trump. And I don't think there's another leader that lives today that could have achieved this. So Trump has to get respect, and he can do no wrong now in Israel. Just, at the Hostages Square, which is a square in Tel Aviv where, people gathered to protest against the government and to listen to the stories of the hostage families. Wheatcroft and Jared Kushner were there during the week, talking to a crowd of 400,000 people, which was just unbelievable. And when Wheatcroft mentioned Trump, there was just like resounding cheers. And then when Wheatcroft mentioned Netanyahu, there was resounding boos. So that's the status Trump has here now.
Yeah, so would it be fair to say that Netanyahu is going to get virtually no credit for this?
Netanyahu is a very masterful politician. He makes our Charles J. Hawhey look like a schoolboy when it comes to politics. So, he'll have time to manufacture his stories. So I wouldn't worry too much about him.
Yeah. Now the plan, as it is, I mean, it has obviously progressed in a ceasefire and releasing the hostages. There are still lots of unanswered questions. Is there in Israel, is there a sense that, this is going to work necessarily, or that it might fall down again?
Look, just let me put it this way. When we found out that a deal had been made, I remember I was talking to my boss in work and I said to her, "Well, what great news to wake up to." And she went, Hold your horses. Nothing has happened yet." And it's once bitten, twice shy from an Israeli perspective. So even like the hostage deal, like we weren't believing it was going to happen until we actually got the news that they had been transferred to the IDF and they were on the way home. So this whole process at the moment, like Israelis are looking at it as a piecemeal process. So the first part of the process is get the living hostages home altogether. The second part would be to get the 28 dead bodies. And remember, some of those bodies were people were killed on October the 7th, and Hamas took their dead bodies and brought them back into Gaza. So, we want them returned. Then after that, the next phase is Hamas laying down its arms, then rebuilding Gaza. It's a long road, but key to this is really Hamas laying down its arms, just like the IRA had to do when we got peace in on the island of Ireland. So it's going to be a long and rocky road. How swift and how smooth that is really lies at the feet of Hamas. But to hear Trump so vehemently kind of say that this is peace, this is a game changer, I am a lot more hopeful, because the last thing Qatar and Turkey and other Arab states want to do is to leave Trump with egg in his face. So, and there's huge pressure on Hamas. Hamas are a broken, spent force. They all their funding is gone. Their munitions are threadbare, and the squeeze is on them. So hopefully, they see the writing on the wall as well and get this done as quickly as possible. There's nothing more than people in Israel, and I know it's the same in Gaza for average people. We just want these last 2 years to be over, to get on and build a peaceful future and a successful future for the Palestinians as well.
Yeah, and I mean, it's long been said that the only person who was ever going to influence Netanyahu was Donald Trump. Is anyone today saying, well, why didn't he do this 6 months ago?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of speculation, Sean, about, and I read in the Irish papers as well, like, why didn't this happen before? You don't realize how finely balanced all of this is and how many things have to come together for a deal to fall into place. And ultimately, at the end of that process, there's a jihadist organization called Hamas, which delights in not only killing Jews and Israelis, but in murdering its own people as well. Yair Sinwar, who was the architect of October 7, he was in an Israeli prison for murder. And who was he charged of murdering with? Who was he prosecuted of murdering? Not Jews, Palestinians. So it's a great day for Hamas to lay down its arms and disband for the Palestinians as well. So to say, why did this happen 5 months ago, 5 weeks ago, a year ago? It's very easy to say that, but the complexity of the situation here in the Middle East, it's just, I'm just thankful that it's happened. Now there's going to be you know, we're going to get back in deep what happened in Israel. We'll get deep into things that happened in Gaza and get the truth. But I think we should just at this point just be thankful that, you know, the hostages are back, the living hostages are back, and it looks pretty likely that this conflict is coming to an end. And not only that, Sean, you have to understand that every Arab country in the Middle East is supportive of this plan. So this could radically transform the Middle East and de-radicalize the Palestinian movement and Hamas, and really build a peaceful future. And that's the big hope. But that doesn't come easy, and it's going to be a slow path.
Yeah. And I just say there that it had been planned, but around 2,000 Palestinian prisoners have been released. Like today in Israel, is anyone really thinking about that, or would people have a feeling on that?
Yeah, well, you know, some of those Palestinian prisoners are in prison for murdering and raping children and committing acts of atrocity. So, you know, the families involved in those, and you know, it's a bitter pill for Israelis to swallow. You know, there's no doubt that there was people swept up in military raids in Gaza that were just in the wrong place at the wrong time or whatever, or have very tenuous connections. And maybe, you know, they're not super evil people, but there's a lot of serious killers that are being released. And again, Yahya Sinwar was released in the last hostage deal when an Israeli soldier was captive, I think, for 4 years. And I think it was 2,000 prisoners released just for that one soldier. And Yahya Sinwar was one of them. And he became the chief architect of October 7. So, yeah, it is something that Israelis think about a lot.
Yeah. And is there a distinction in the Israeli mind between Hamas and Gazans? And I'm thinking obviously of like the 65,000 odd people who died.
Yeah, well, I think there's a few things in that, but the quick answer is yes, of course. But let's say 65,000-70,000 people died. Okay, those figures still have to be clarified. But let's take we call it the Gaza Health Ministry, but it's Hamas. So those figures are coming from a terror organization. But let's take them at their word. Okay, when Hamas announces figures of X amount of people die, you'll notice that they never include their own figures, like five Hamas terrorists and eight citizens. It's just all one number. So the estimated figure here is that it's one terrorist to 1.5 civilians. Okay, so for each terrorist killed, there's 1.5 civilians died in Gaza. So that means there's probably around 45,000 terrorists killed and around 65,000-70,000 civilians. Now, that's horrible, right? And every person listening to this will go, that's terrible. But unfortunately, that's war. And the UN and the EU estimate that the average ratio in combat in wars is a 1-9 ratio. So one combatant for 9 civilians is an average. So Israel has done as much, and this is, there's been no war ever fought like this. You know, for all the aid that the Palestinian people got, so for all those like bake sales or concerts in Ireland or elsewhere in the world that raised money and sent it to Palestine or to Gaza over the years, Hamas built a tunnel network of some 500 kilometers with reinforced concrete and steel underneath Gaza, and then went to attack Israel, then hid in those shelters, didn't allow civilians to get into the best bomb shelter network in the world. They hid there, they hid with the hostages there, and used their population as fodder for war. So Israelis understand that. The difficult thing is, where does that line, the line between innocent Palestinian and Hamas terrorist? It's not very easy, because Hamas doesn't wear, they love to show off when they're handing over prisoners, hostages, but when they're actually in combat, they're just wearing normal clothes, so they can blend into civilian areas very, very easily and blend into crowds. You know, it is tough. And one thing that's very important, it's very interesting that I read in the Irish Times about, you know, these are all the Israeli companies, you can boycott their goods. And I'm always hearing about people, you know, there was an incident, I'm sure you remember it, it was maybe a year ago or so, two young ladies spat on an Israeli in a restaurant in Dublin. So it's very simple for Irish people to hold normal Israeli citizens accountable for their government. But the reverse is never, and again, this is the double standard, like, there is some support in Gaza for Hamas. Remember, they elected Hamas in free elections. And in the West Bank now, if there was an election, I don't know about now, but definitely there was a poll done about a month ago by an Arab news organization, and Hamas would win that election. Or there would have about a month ago. I need to see the current figures. So it's not as easy as black and white, but there is a definite distinction. And when the IDF tries to move people out of harm's way, again, a horrible thing to have to leave your home. But if they know there's terrorists and munitions there that have been fired in Israel, hostages have been kept, the army is going to go in and get that. And they're saying to civilians, if you can just move out of the way, we know it's terrible. But this is war. And what's the alternative? That they leave them there and then shell the place and they die. And then there's this more controversy about, civilians dying. So it's just hugely complex. But again, the short answer is yes, people understand. And there's a great affinity. Before October 7, Sean, a lot of Palestinians crossed over and worked in Israel. And I know a friend of mine came to Israel in the late 70s, and he was telling me it was very common for people in Gaza to come work in Tel Aviv, to go holiday in Gaza. And even in 2005, when Israel left Gaza and gave the Palestinians their own state, but there was still Palestinians coming across the border and working up until October the 7th. So there is a great affinity between these two people, believe it or not. And the Israelis do see a difference between a normal Palestinian and Hamas. But just where to draw that line? It's so shady and so grey, and it's very difficult in times of war.
Mm-hmm. Though I suppose, just going back to that poll you mentioned, I suppose the events of the 2 years would have may well have radicalized another generation of Gazans.
Yeah.
So look, it's a circular thing.
Yeah. But, well, look, the good thing I think is going to happen is that the truth is going to have to be told, and the Palestinian people are going to have to be de-radicalized. Saudi Arabia has a good history in de-radicalizing, some of its citizens. So I think the Arab countries will be able to help to de-radicalize them, because until that happens, there's no Palestinian state. And Ireland can recognize a Palestinian state until the cows come home. But there's no Palestinian state that's going to be allowed to be created. And not just from Israel's perspective, but allowed to be created, that is a breeding ground for jihadist terrorists. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to de-radicalize the Palestinian people. And then once de-radicalized, to build what could be an amazing future for them. But that de-radicalization is going to happen. That whole circular argument that if Israel is defending itself, therefore, it radicalizes more and this will never end. That's just an endless argument that doesn't really have any intellectual kind of validity. I think we need to just talk facts and find out how can we look. It happened with the Nazis. They were de-radicalized in Germany. The Japanese were de-radicalized as well, and were able to go on and build wonderful economies and countries. And it's just the same is going to have to happen here. But there's going to have to be a lot of truth. And I just, for any of your listeners, go in and look at what educational classes are taught to, well, were taught to Palestinian children regarding Israel and the type of literature. It's just pure hate. And that obviously has to stop. And just as we have a mutual respect and recognition on both sides, and as we know as a nation, the Irish nation, it's the road to peace is a rocky one. But you can't portray it as one side good, one side bad. And that simplistic kind of understanding of the Middle East just has to be kind of done away with and actually have serious discussions. And the saddest thing when I listen to people being interviewed about the situation here, for example, Alan Shatter was on one of the TV current affairs shows, and they had him sitting down beside Brian Kennedy. Now, Alan Shatter, I would class as an intellectual. I doubt you would disagree with that depiction, Sean. Brian Kennedy is a wonderful singer, but he's a singer. And Alan Shatter was trying to talk about facts and logic, because you can cry a river, but no war has ever been brought to a stop or solved by tears. And that's just, again, it is sad, but it's true.
Can I just ask you one last thing, John, before I let you go? Because you mentioned radicalization. Do you think there's any radicalization that has happened within Israel, within Israeli society, that, you know, the settlements of the West Bank, you know, a sense that God owes us this land?
Yeah, look, they're lunatics, Sean. I can't say more than that. And look, unfortunately, at the moment, with the government we have, that is a problem that is difficult for Israel to solve, but it needs to be solved. You know, so I don't think they're bigger or have more support since the war, because normal Israelis are still normal Israelis, probably feel a little bit more right wing than normal, because this happens during the time of war. But the settlers in the West Bank, that's a separate issue to the Gaza story, and that needs to be solved with international help and the help of the Israeli government. But that's a pinprick in the whole menu of things that need to be resolved and solved, but it should be part of any peace process.
John, excuse me. Thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was John Costello there, an Irish journalist who lives in Israel. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We'll take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.